Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Okay, there's some questions.
On Anucheta 53.3,
try to send the questions to the conference. It's in the mail. It's in the address book. Just look for SBV Sundarbha's seminar. It came to me personally. Maybe there's something wrong with this, with the conference. Wait a minute. I'm sorry, because it's private, it's getting sent to me as mail? Right, but I'm not, see, what I'm getting is, it's coming to me as a personal letter, and then it says four, and it has the name of the conference. But how come it doesn't go, how come I don't see the conference? I'm not a member? Well, then how come I can't see it? Yeah. Well, I'm going to... Yeah, you can explain to everybody at the end of the class what to do to send questions. Anyway, I'm answering them. So Vishnu Kanta is asking about this quote from the Chandogya Upanishad, chapter 8, describing the qualities of the capital soul. You know, he's untouched by sin, free from old age, and one of those qualities is his desires are always fulfilled. So which soul are we talking about? Is it the Jiva Atma or the Paramatma? The way I understand it, although I haven't studied, you know, the whole Upanishad, is that we're talking about actually both. That these qualities are qualities of both the Supreme Soul, these eight qualities are qualities of both the Supreme Soul and the Jiva Soul. I'm almost sure I remember reading that in Ramanujacharya's Vedanta Sangraha, that's how he interprets it. Now, how can it be the small spirit soul? How is all of his desires fulfilled? Well, they're fulfilled when he's liberated. In his pure natural condition, all his desires are fulfilled. He's not going to have inappropriate material desires when he's in his natural condition. We're not talking about the conditioned soul, but the free soul, the liberated soul. And it's described, I think, in the same part, but it's in the same Upanishad, described how the jiva gets the fulfillment, an elaborate description of how the jiva gets the fulfillment of all his desires. Whatever desire he wants, he goes to a world where he gets the fulfillment of it. That is specifically said about the jivatma. Okay? No? Well, get the microphone.
The question is, when the jiva is there in the liberated state, during that...
In the what state?
In the liberated state, when he's in the spiritual world, when the jiva...
Liberated state, yeah.
Yeah, at that time he desires to enjoy independently from Krishna. That desire can never be fulfilled, because he is always subservient
to the
Lord.
Well, that generally doesn't happen. That's not being considered here. We're thinking about the liberated jiva, who normally doesn't have any perverted desires and the inappropriate desires. So in general, with the exception of a jiva who happens to be a Vaikuntha and decides to fall down, with the exception of that, they get all their desires fulfilled. And also, okay, I want to enjoy separately from Krishna. You get that fulfilled too by getting sent to the material world.
But that's not real enjoyment. He only suffers here.
Yes. We didn't say about enjoyment. We said about fulfillment of desires. All desires are fulfilled. You desire to suffer, you'll suffer. You desire to rebel against Krishna, you will suffer. But your desire is fulfilled. You can rebel against Krishna. Go ahead and try it. doesn't mean you'll be satisfied. You'll mean you'll get what you want and suffer for it. So it fits even the jiva who's going to fall down. Yes, Sarvagya Prabhu. Is it? Go ahead.
Like we know this quotation from, I think, Upanishad, Nityanitinam Chitanam Chitanam, Ekobahanam, Yavidathatikaman. He said that the Supreme Lord, he is fulfilling all desires of living entities. So it seems that all desire can be fulfilled by Krishna's mercy.
It doesn't say, if you look at the verse exactly, it doesn't say Sarvakaman. It just says Bahunam Vididatikaman. Literally, it just says he fulfills desires of many. Doesn't mean necessarily he'll fulfill every single desire. But he's busy fulfilling all sorts of people's desires. It doesn't mean he doesn't refuse some or ignore some. That statement, at least, doesn't say all desires of all everybody's every single desire. It doesn't say that. Because, anyway, the conditioned souls are not really getting their desires fulfilled. They're getting a lot of their desires frustrated. That's conditioned souls. Okay. Now we have another question from Vishnukanta about the discussion of, in 53.3, of the consciousness of something blue fading and the consciousness of something yellow arising. Well, you're asking, what are the entities that are used in the example, these blue thing and the yellow thing? Are they inanimate examples? How can they possess consciousness? There's a problem here with the English. Ambiguous consciousness of. That can refer to the subject or the object. A person can have consciousness, but he has consciousness of something. So the word of is confusing. I don't know if it's confusing enough that we really have to change it. What we meant is the person has consciousness of something blue, not that there's some blue thing that has consciousness. Okay? I can add the phrase person. A person has consciousness like that, of. That will fix it, but I'll check with Jayadwaita Maharaj. Can I mark it? Consciousness of something blue. A person's consciousness. And then that removes the confusion, okay? Marked. Hold on a second. Is it right to this point? Yes? Okay, sure.
I don't know if it's fixed or it's typo.
Where in the sentence, but we see consciousness?
Yeah.
That's the fourth word. Is that sentence?
On the second line, which indicates that consciousness?
Which indicates? I'm not looking on the right line. Hold on a second. I don't see a which indicates. What's the beginning of the sentence?
But we see consciousness of something blue fading and consciousness of something yellow rising
to the basis. Yes. It's been fixed. It's been fixed already. The sentence was rewritten and it's been fixed. Okay, and then you had another question. No, that was your questions. Now Nityananda Prabhu's questions. Okay. We had Jiva Goswami summing things up and says, here's one argument for the difference between the soul and matter and a second argument for the same thing. So you didn't understand what we were talking about, this avadhi, the ultimate ground, the coming and going, things that come and go, contrasted to the avadhi of coming and going. Well, in grammar, we use the word avadhi was used. And there's two kinds of avadis. There's the sampradana and the apadana. They're both limits. One of them is that toward which you're going, and the other one is that from which you're coming. And it's coming and going that's actually involved there. So it's the beginning or the end of coming and going. Where you're coming from, or where you're going to, and where you're coming from. Those are the avadis. And the supreme is both where everything's coming from and where everything's going to. So it's the limit in that sense. Maybe I have to clarify that. The ultimate ground. I already made a note about that. I just said the ultimate ground underlying. But that's not really saying it the same way. Not so clear. I already marked it. I have to reconsider that. Okay, then about this dhara vidya, this meditation. There's a lotus in the heart, and there's a sky in the lotus, and you've got to invest. Oh, there's a house. The lotus is a house. In that lotus house, there's a sky, a subtle sky, and you have to find out what's in that subtle sky. The sky is Paramatma. You're asking, what are we talking about? What's inside Paramatma? I didn't make it explicit. I should. The qualities of Paramatma are what's inside the sky. The Paramatma is the sky, and what we're looking for inside the sky are his personal qualities. I already noted that I should add that. A sentence saying that, you know, what finding out what's within the sky means finding out the qualities of the Paramatma. Okay? This is the problem. You have to make sure when you're writing, you may know what you're talking about. You may have an idea in your head, but you have to convey it to the reader. I presume that everybody knows what we're talking about is the qualities inside Paramatma. But actually, you have to tell the reader that. Not everybody's going to catch it. You've got to be explicit. Okay, one more question from Nityananda Prabhu. Oh, this is what you said was a typo. In Anuchet 29, back in file 6, there's talk about the goal of human life and something which strongly binds one to him, the Supreme Lord. And then you have bonds. Actually, it's been changed to bonds. That's Jayadvaita Maharaj's preference. It's a different word. There are two words, to bind and to bond. Bind is to stick something, like, you know, the fly stick on the flypaper. And bond is like, you know, a baby calf. There's a bond that develops between the calf and the mother. It's a more personal thing. And that's why Jayadvaita Maharaj liked that word better. It's intentional. Okay? It also means, I mean, you can use glue to bond also. You can talk about bonding with glue, but it's also used in personal development of personal relationships, bonding. Okay, those are the questions. Any more questions you got, send them. I'll be there in Vrindavan. I'll be in the Vrindavan 6th, 7th, 8th. I think I'll come back the night of the 8th, but I might come back the morning of the 9th. And then 10th, is 10th our celebration of Govardhan Puja? We're celebrating here on the 10th. The cook had a meeting with Asif Krishna, and they were speaking about the 10th. Okay, 10th. That is Saturday, right? 10th is Saturday.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, now we move on. I'll give you a quick review of what Anuchet 53 was about. Well, 53 is just carrying on from the idea that by understanding the jiva, you can begin to find out about the Supreme. And discussion is given from the Bhagavatam. Which part of the Bhagavatam? It's a verse 416. Anyway, 16:12. Bhagavatam 11th canto, chapter 3, about how the soul is never born, never dies. He's a constant witness. So this is the nature of the soul that we should learn about, because that's also the nature of the Supreme. That's the Bhagavatam saying that. This verse will be discussed more extensively in the beginning of the Bhagavatam Dharma. This verse will be taken as very significant. Bhagavatam Dharma, I think. Then the conscious soul is eternally consciousness. His consciousness doesn't change. There's a purvapaksha questioning that, because awareness is usually awareness of things that change. like the awareness of something blue. I see something blue now, but an hour later I'm looking at something yellow. The consciousness changes, but that changing part has to do just with the activity of the senses and the different sensations they pick up. But the consciousness underlying that awareness is constant and unchanging and eternal. That was the discussion of 53. Now we'll look at 54. 54.1. Drishtantam vivinvan indriyadi leena nirvikaratmopalabdim darshayati. Now, the very next verse from the same chapter of the 11th canto. These two verses go together. Now we look at the second verse. Andeshu peshishu tarush avinishyateshu prano hi jivam upadavati tatra tatra sanne yad indriyagane ahamicha pasupte kutasta ashayam rite tananusmritir naha. Andeshu, andajeshu. Peshishu, jirayu jeshu. Tarushu, udbid jeshu. Avinishjiteshu, sweda jeshu. Upadavati, anuvartite. Some glosses on some of the words. Expanding this analogy, the next verse, 11.3.39, teaches how to perceive the changeless soul when the senses, mind, and false ego dissolve. The spirit soul is born in many different species of life within the material world. Some species are born from eggs, others from embryos, others from the seeds of plants and trees, and others from perspiration. But in all species of life, the prana, or vital air, remains unchanging and follows the spirit soul from one body to another. Similarly, the spirit soul is eternally the same despite its material condition. Oh, boy. Hold on a second. I'm making a note about the question reference here. Okay. Similarly, the spirit soul is eternally the same despite its material condition. We have practical experience of this. When we are absorbed in deep sleep without dreaming, the material senses become inactive, and even the mind and false ego are merged into a dormant condition. But although the senses, mind, and false ego are inactive, one remembers upon waking that he, the soul, was peacefully sleeping. Here, andeshu, among eggs, means, well, okay, the jiva is born among eggs. What does that mean? He's born in a bird's nest? In a pile of eggs? No, it means, in general, it's a metaphor, a lakshanavritti. We don't just mean that he's literally inside the eggs, but that he's born in species that do their giving birth from eggs. It means in species born from eggs. Peshishu, among fetuses, means in species born from wombs. Tarushu, among trees, means in plant species, not just trees, but all vegetables. That is upalakshanam, a partial reference. If we say trees, we mean all plants. Avinishchiteshu, among the indeterminate, mean in species born from perspiration. Can't fit them in any other category. They're the maggots and others who are born from perspiration. And upadavati runs after. Well, it's not that jiva is trying to catch a bus and he's running after it. No, it means he's following. That means his consciousness takes a form according to the conditioning of the body he enters. He wasn't thinking like a dog in his previous life, but now he's put into a dog body. He starts thinking and acting like a dog. He's following the conditioning of the body. It's not his conditioning, it's conditioning of the body. Okay.
Okay, there's a state of deep sleep in which your senses and mind and even the ego are inactive. That means you're not looking at anything, you're not hearing anything, you're not thinking anything, and you're not even thinking about yourself as the experiencer. You're not even aware of yourself. But you're still the witness, the sakshi. How can you... can you have such awareness? When we verbalize our experience, we always usually include ourselves. I saw a brilliant light. You're there as the subject. And you're describing a sense activity, a sensation. So what kind of experience can you have as a witness in deep sleep when even your false ego is dormant? Can it be verbal, the answer? Can you verbalize it without using the senses and the ego? Put it in words. Yes?
It's done by memory, like when...
By what?
It cannot be verbalized at that time, but it's done after he wakes up, only then he can verbalize it.
Okay, but do you mean the consciousness only exists when he wakes up? But then how can he say, I slept so comfortably? If he wasn't conscious, if his consciousness was turned off during that time, like you hypnotize somebody that you won't remember anything that happens, then he won't remember it. But now he's remembering it. How can you remember something you didn't experience? So how did that, supposedly that argument is always given by the logicians and by the Vedantists as proof that the soul is awake, the soul is conscious even in deep sleep. So there is a consciousness in deep sleep. What can it be? Can it be a verbal, can you think in words when you're in deep sleep? I don't think so because, it's hard to avoid description of yourself, mention of yourself, and the ego is supposed to be asleep. It looks like in order to say anything, you're going to have to wake the ego up and wake the senses up, or at least the mind. How can you? You can't form a sentence without using the mind. So if the mind's asleep, you can't think in words. What can you do? Well, we may not be able to understand or describe it, but we have to presume by process of elimination. If there is consciousness and it's not consciousness in words, then it must be a nonverbal consciousness. It's a raw consciousness that's there. That's what it means to be a witness. You don't see anything in particular because you don't have any senses working, and you don't think any thoughts about it in words because the mind is asleep. But still there's awareness. The Nyaya philosophy recognizes the validity of what we call nirvikalpaka jnana. That means you look at something but you haven't identified what it is. You see a cow, but you're just, for a while you're just looking at it. What is that thing over there? And for a while you may not recognize it's a cow. Maybe you haven't seen a cow, in 50 years. You forgot, you've been living in, in New York City and you don't have any, you never went to the zoo and you forgot what a cow was. And you see one over, you go out to New Jersey and you see one of these things and you're looking at it, and for a while you can't remember what that is over there, what that kind of thing is. So you can have a perception, unidentified perception. That's called nirvikalpaka jnana. That kind of awareness is possible in deep sleep. But you can't identify anything. You can't give anything a name or know exactly what it is. That's my understanding. Okay? Should we move on to 54.2? Evam drishtanti. We're talking about the example. What's the example here? What example is being given in this verse? No, it's about the soul. The verse is about the soul. But what other thing is referred to as an example that is like the soul? Or the soul is like that?
You said the consciousness
Okay, so a person's experience in deep sleep is the example. The previous verse, we had the air as the example, the life air. As the life air travels from body to body, similarly the soul does. That was the previous verse, the one we discussed at the beginning of the energy. My computer decided to reboot. I don't know why. I have to wait for it to come back. Or Nityananda Prabhu, well, you don't have the same file, though. You have an older file.
Well, no, the translation.
Okay, I'm going to start reading from here.
54.2.
Evam drishtante nirvikara tvam pradarshya. Darshtante ke pi darshayati. Katam? Tadaiv atma savikara iva pratiyate. Yada jagare indriya. Gano yada chaswapne tat samskara van ahankaraha yada tu prasuptam tada tasmin prasupta indriya game sane lina ahami ahankare chasanne line kutasto nivakara atma kutaha ashayam rite linga shariram upadim vina vikara hetur Upadir Abhavat.
Having shown the changelessness of the analogous object, the life air.
There's the wrong one. The verse goes on to show the changelessness of the object to which the analogy applies, the soul. Is the analogous thing the life air? We just said that's from the first verse. Here it's the consciousness in deep sleep is the example. Am I identified? Because that's in brackets. That's my addition. Anyway, I'll go on and we'll come back to this. The verse goes on to show the changelessness of the object to which the analogy applies, which is the soul. How does it show this? When the soul is awake, it seems to be undergoing change. When all the senses are asleep, the ego retains sensory impressions. But when one is in deep sleep, and the senses and ego are temporarily merged in dissolution, the changeless soul remains steady. How do we know this? We know it from the understanding that when the seat of tainted consciousness, the subtle body, is unmanifest, no upadis remain to impose changes upon the soul. Oh, boy. Okay, hold on a second. Yeah, the life air is there in this verse also. So the example is the life air. And what we're actually describing is the jiva. And what the jiva is experiencing in deep sleep is proof that he's the same in all conditions, even deep sleep. But the analogy is still prana uhi jiva mapudavati. That was mentioned at the end of the previous verse, like the life air. And here the life air is being shown running after, not the jiva, but the life air is shown running after one body after another. Okay, now I can open my file here. Okay, you can take your machine back. I can see it from here. Okay, 54.3. Nanu ahankara pranyantasya sarvasya laye shunyam eva vashishyate kvatada kutasta atma ata aha tadanu smitir nas tasya kandatmanak sushupti sakshinaha smitir no asmakam jagra drashtrinam jayate. Atavantam kalam sukam aham aswapsam na kinchida vedisham iti. Ato ananubhutasya tasya smaranad astyeva sushuptau tadrig atmanubhuvo vishya sambandh abhavatcha naspashta iti bhavaha. But if everything dissolves, including the ego, nothing remains.
That's the Purvapaksha.
How then is the soul still in its steady position? In answer, it is said, we have remembrance of this, tadannu smritir naha. As awake observers, we remember the indivisible soul, the witness of deep sleep. What it is that you're conscious of in deep sleep. There's no senses, so you're not conscious of sense objects. But you're conscious of yourself, the soul. Not the mind. The mind's asleep also. But the soul's still awake. And the soul is conscious of itself, even without the help of mind, of ego, mind, and senses. The soul remains the witness of itself, at least, if nothing else. And the words are, tadanu smritir naha. We have remembrance of this. As awake observers, we remember this indivisible soul, the witness of deep sleep. And one says to himself, I slept comfortably for so long and wasn't aware of anything. So there's nothing, no object of awareness, but the subject is there, I. And I has this experience. He remembers sleeping comfortably. Therefore, since nothing can be remembered if not experienced before, the soul had such experience in deep sleep. It's not that he made it up, he's imagining it. He actually experienced it. In deep sleep, he was experiencing his own comfortable sleeping. The soul experiences some kind of bliss in deep sleep. That's told us in the Upanishads. It's a replica of Brahmananda, of this bliss of actual self-realization, which is eternal. We get a temporary dose of that every night when we are in deep sleep. We experience some reflection of ecstasy. So the soul is aware of something, but it's internal, nothing external to himself. The soul had such an experience in deep sleep, although because the soul was then out of contact with sense objects, the experience was indistinct. No distinction. No verbalization. 54.4. Atak swaprakasha matra vastunaha surya adek prakasha vad upalabdhi matra sya apyatmana upalabdhik swashraye stye dyev etyayatam. What does this word ayatam mean? What does it literally mean? Why do we say comes? What's coming? Upalabdhi. What do we mean when we say an understanding comes? And it's past participle. Came. What's the technical sense of that? Not just understood, but inferred. It's derived by a logical process. It's not just someone tells me something. We don't say ayatam there. When I figure something out by logic, when I deduce something, then I call it ayata or agata. Okay? Tata cha shrutihi. The experience is direct. But the proof that there is an experience has to be done by logic. I mean, you do have perception of the experience, and that's a proof by projection. But we prove it for others, because others are not going to experience, I'll experience my deep sleep, but you won't experience my deep sleep. To prove it to you that I was awake, conscious in my deep sleep, I have to use logic. So it's derived by logic. Tatacha shruti yadvai tan napashyati pashyannavai drashtavyan napashyati nahi drashtur drishter viparilopo vidyate iti. Ayam sakshi sakshya vibhagena tritiyas tarka dukhi premasparatva vibhagena chaturtopi tarko vagantavyaha.
Oh boy.
Yes, okay, translation, sorry. I'm sorry, I can't hear. Yeah, what do you... No, it's fixed. It's fixed. Translation. We can conclude, therefore, that the soul, although pure awareness, is itself an object of its own awareness, just as luminous bodies like the sun are objects revealed by their own light. Shruti, therefore, says, it is true that he, the soul, during deep sleep, does not see, or rather that although seeing, he does not see externally visible objects. To remove the seer's vision altogether is impossible. That is the 22 Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, 4th chapter. This is the third argument, which proceeds from the distinction between the witness and the witnessed. Argument for what? We're giving arguments of the difference between the soul and matter. Okay, how the soul, because we're trying to understand the soul. So we're understanding the soul as something different than everything material. And we had two other arguments in the previous anuchet. Here is the third and fourth argument for the difference between the soul and everything material. Third argument, which proceeds from the distinction between the witness and the witnessed. The fourth argument is implied by the distinction between being unhappy and being a reservoir of ecstatic love. Uh-oh. Matter is not unhappy. Okay, I'm making a note of this. What difference are we talking about here? I thought it was the difference between spirit and matter. But how do you call matter unhappy? Yeah, but then are we distinguishing the supreme, the difference between the supreme and matter, or the supreme and the finite soul? The finite soul, the conditioned soul, is unhappy. I'm sorry, I'm confused about this. I have to sort it out and settle it later. I'll have to look at it. What do you have? What do you see? Okay, so, okay, now we have a distinction between what comes and goes. Well, that's not the, what I'm just trying to clarify. Okay, we're trying to prove the spiritual nature of the Supreme Soul, and then we say that. Okay, that's okay. But then we're talking about distinction between something and something. Presumably one of those things is the Supreme Soul. What's the other thing? The difference between the Supreme Soul and matter. Okay, but here we run into a problem. The blissful and unhappy. Matter's not unhappy. Matter's unconscious. So I can see a difference between, well, maybe we're having different differences. You know, the supreme is different than matter. It's also different from the conditioned soul.
But then why can you enumerate the first, second, third, and fourth?
Because we have different distinctions?
Then you should have started a new counting then.
I'm still a little confused. I need to study this and straighten it out and maybe rewrite part of it. What commentary? My commentary? Yeah, they explained it wrong. Well, let me see what's said in the commentary to 53. The last paragraph. This verse shows two ways of understanding the jiva's spiritual nature. That is not the same as what I said in the translation, right? Okay. We said supremes in the translation. Well, I don't know which one is right or whether both are right, but I'm making a note to check it. Which is a reflection of the supreme's perfect nature. Well, it's like I said in the translation, we're talking about the Supreme's nature. Now I'm saying in the commentary that it's talking about the jiva, because the jiva is a reflection of the Supreme.
Okay, that might work. The soul suffers no change while changing bodies, and he is a living, conscious witness of the material transformations of his own body and the world outside him. Well, that applies to the individual soul also. That's okay. But here, we've got the difference between being happy and being a reservoir of ecstatic love. Well, the jiva is also a reservoir of ecstatic love. What do we mean that matter is unhappy? Okay, let's go on to the commentary and see if there's any clarification. Commentary 54. Many people who believe that modern science is human civilization's most valuable source of enlightenment will not acknowledge the existence of the conscious living self as anything more than an epiphenomenon of organic matter. The soul cannot be weighed or seen through an electron microscope, nor its presence detected by other empiric means. Logic based on the premise of sensory evidence also fails to prove the soul's existence. Because critical thinkers will not accept the authority of Shabda Pramana, the uncertain guesses of speculative philosophy and theology provide the only information they have about the essence of life. Rigorous scientific psychology is limited to knowledge of the external symptoms of consciousness. Scientists try to measure thought and feelings through the brain's electrical output. But these brain waves are no more useful for understanding the psyche than the letters of a book written in a forgotten language is for knowing the intended meanings of its ancient author. More radical psychologists try to delve into the secrets of the soul, but without sound spiritual orientation, they cannot appreciate a human being's transcendental urges. Instead, they interpret them as nothing more than the same instincts for survival we share with unintelligent animals. The Vedic literature presents the best science of psychology. For example, the verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam presented in the Sanuchade provides an enlightened model of the state of affairs of a conscious soul within the material coverings. The first half of the verse says that the soul remains unchanging while passing from one body to another. And because this fact cannot be established empirically, the verse then uses the varieties of experience the soul undergoes within a single body as an analogy to help us understand the changeless nature of the soul. Well, the two verses we're discussing are about the individual soul. Then, during each typical day of its embodied life, a living being passes in and out of three basic psychological states: external wakefulness, dreaming, some of us are in that condition now, and dreamless deep sleep. Physical psychology has identified these three states by electroencephalography. That was Jayadeva Vaidyavarya's word. But gives no clue about the basis of these different states. According to Vedic revelation, the jiva in material existence is covered first by a subtle body composed of ego, intelligence, and mind, and then by the outward, tangible body. In wakefulness, jagara, a person's senses are active, in contact with the outside world. Within, his senses are also connected to the awake mind, which selectively pays attention to varieties of sensory input. Through further connections with the intelligence and ego, this input reaches the jiva, the actual seat of consciousness in this complex, subtle mechanism. Hare Krishna. When a person is in the second state of sleep, supti, his external senses are inactive, but the mind, which, though lacking input from the physical world, is still active, creates dreams. In the third state, that of deeper sleep, sushupti, the three components of the subtle body also become dormant. Ata yada sushupto bhavati, yada na kasyachana veda hita nama nadyo dva saptati sahasrani hridayat puritattam abhipratishtante tabik pratyavasripya puritati shete
72,000 subtle nerves of perception, known as hitta, expand from the heart and converge at a juncture within a single nerve, the puritat. When the self is deeply asleep and not aware of anything, he has become detached from contact with the hitta nerves and entered the puritat. This is the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad talking. Shruti testifies that the soul is present and conscious in deep sleep. Although he is not in touch with any external sensations, concrete memories, or dreams, he continues to witness his own existence. It is said that he perceives a kind of pleasure in deep sleep, a mild, temporary version of Brahmananda, the bliss known as liberation from material bondage. Because he still has desires for material enjoyment, the soul must leave this state and wake up again. But by this daily bathing in his natural happiness, he receives the rest he needs to endure his ongoing material life. Rest, sleep. Rest doesn't mean everything else here. It means vishram. Pragyaninatmana sampariśrakto nabhayam kinchana veda nantaram. Embraced by the omniscient supersoul, he has no knowledge of anything, external or internal. Even while thus unaware of anything else, the soul in deep sleep vaguely and unconsciously perceives the presence of himself and his constant companion in the heart, the supersoul. Thus, after waking, he sometimes says, "I slept so comfortably that I wasn't aware of anything." In other words, he remembers his own sustained existence through the period of deep sleep. The true ego of the eternal soul always underlies his false ego of material identification, ahankara. Uncovering itself momentarily in sushupti, deep sleep, it continues after final liberation as the soul's self-awareness of being a servant of the Supreme Person. The soul has been described above in the previous verse of the 11th canto, 3rd chapter, as upalabdhimatra, pure consciousness. Mayavad philosophies insist that this transcendental nature disallows the separate presence of the knower, the knowable object, and the process of knowledge. Since the soul is pure awareness, the Mayavadis say, he cannot be a subject possessing specific awareness. He cannot be a person. But common experience tells us that sources of illumination reveal all kinds of objects, including themselves. There is no sensible meaning of pure illumination which does not reveal anything. And when there is no special reason for its being hidden, a source of light usually shows itself as well. Thus, when the conscious self is in deep sleep, it is said that he doesn't see anything, because there is nothing for him to see, not because there is no seer. We say, again, not that he isn't there, that there's no soul, no individual soul in deep sleep or in liberation, but in deep sleep, what's missing is anything to see, any senses to see him with them with, any mind to contemplate them with. He's there. And he's also there in the perfection of liberation. The spirit soul continues to exist. This doesn't touch on that analogy. The fourth argument is implied by the distinction between being unhappy and being a reservoir of ecstatic love. Okay. Dukkhi. I can see that material objects are causes of distress, but I don't see material objects having distress. So I have to look and see what's meant by that. Huh. Okay. So if you have questions, please arrange to send them to me. Since I'll be gone for 3 days or 3.5 days, I'll answer the questions by email and maybe also in the class, but I'll answer your questions promptly. I won't wait 3-4 days. Supposedly, but I'm not even seeing the conference.
What I'm getting is individual messages. It's not working right. I'll have to find out why. But maybe Dermot can explain how it's supposed to work. Go ahead, please. The conference's address, not my
address. Yeah, conference address. That's it. But another thing, what we can do, it's like, I can collect everyone's email, and you will add everyone to that conference because you are organizer of that conference. Then everyone will receive the answers. Whatever you.
Okay. Order. How come I'm supposed to be a member already, right?
Yes, you are the.
Well, why am I not receiving any? I'm not receiving any hint of the conference existing. It's not showing up. It's like being redirected to me personally, but I'm not seeing the conference. You know, it's a message to me. And it says for the conference, but okay. All right, let's try to add members and see what happens. Could you send me today a list of members? Okay. Anybody not want to be a member? Oh. Don't have to be a Pam Hall. You just have to have an email address.
No.
That's why we have to collect the addresses if you're not on Pam Hall. Okay, send me the list and I'll make everybody a member. Also, anybody who's not a student in the school who wants to join wants to see the conference, it's public. You can even ask questions. And we're just, you know, we have recordings of the lectures if you want to hear them. So someone outside wants to participate, they can. All right, so we'll stop for now. All right, thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Sri Tattva Sundar Bhakti Jaya.